I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
When two movies take two people. In this episode, we're watching you through the window. It's Disturbia from 2007 and Rear Window from 1954. I was going to say 45, but that's not correct.
It's somewhere around there. Yeah. So, this is not a remake, to the point that the owners of the copyright of the short story that Rear Window was based on sued the makers of Disturbia and lost the suit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were like, you just remade this movie without the copyright, and then it was thrown out. It went to court, and the judge deemed that there weren't enough similarities. But we're going to...
It's pretty similar.
We're going to argue on the other side. Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
But I guess, it is, it's also quite different because it's modern and it's, there's subplots and whatever. Yeah.
So basically, the premise of both the movies is someone stuck inside, and instead of getting a constructive hobby, they just watch their next door neighbors.
Yep.
And mainly because it's Shia LaBeouf in Disturbia, not Rear Window. He's a creep and spends most of the time watching his next young female next door neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Both movies revolve around discovering that one of your neighbors is, in fact, a murderer.
Doo-doo-doo.
Yeah.
Yep. In one case, when the case of Disturbia, he's a serial killer.
Murderer, yeah.
Whereas in Rear Window, he has murdered one person.
Yeah.
Who is his wife. Spoiler alert, by the end of the movie,
Spoiler alert.
I feel like it's not a huge spoiler. Like, going into Rear Window that he's going to have done it, right? Yeah. There's never a moment where you think, oh, I guess he didn't do it. That's the end of the movie,
Yeah.
You're like, how are they gonna prove that he did it? What did he do with the body,
What didn't he do?
Yeah, they also both evolve a love interest who gets really into the investigation. Yeah. They both evolve someone else being sent over to the person's house while our hero watches helplessly from where he's stuck inside.
Yeah.
They both involve the person, confronting them, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of
bits 100% of think that when they were writing Disturbia,
mm-hmm.
they were going. So, okay, I'll give you a little bit of context. Rear Window does this way better, but anyway, explaining how he's stuck inside. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
in the beginning of Disturbia, you have this wholesome, I say that with air quotes. Which I didn't do.
I wasn't going to call you on it.
that time I did. Moment between Shia LaBeouf and his dad fly fishing, and then his dad dies in a car crash, and then he loses it because he's not doing well in Spanish class and punches out his Spanish teacher.
No, in fairness, the Spanish teacher deserved it.
Yeah.
But also, I have seen Disturbia before,
right.
around the time that it first came out, and I remembered that he was on house arrest for the movie, but I couldn't remember why. So then, the beginning bit where he's, fishing with his dad, I was like, I think this is the wrong movie, and then they're in the car crash, and I was like, was he driving illegally?
Yeah.
Is he under house arrest for killing his own father? And then it was like, oh, no, okay. He punches the Spanish teacher for telling him.
I think originally, this is my theory anyway, originally they were going to go that he was stuck inside because he was injured from the car crash. And they were like, oh shit, this is way too close to real.
That is too much like Rear Window.
Yeah, more than get sued.
Or they wanted to figure out,
convoluted.
But the thing about him being on house arrest is it works for plot reasons.
Yeah, because he's using the house arrest device.
Yeah, to call the police. Yeah. He doesn't need to actually physically call them.
Yeah.
If he can get his little ankle bracelet over the perimeter.
Yeah, which comes into the plot later on.
Yeah, so I don't know. So I'd say I 100% agree that it could easily have been that they were writing that he was in this accident and that was, you know, he was injured. But I think, I don't think it would have been solely to get away from the rear window stuff. I think also it would have been someone thought, hey, actually, you know, having an ankle bracelet would work for plot reasons, because that, you know, because then all he needs to do is get his foot over the line.
Do you know what movie we could also do with Disturbia?
Which one?
Homebound.
Housebound?
Housebound.
Yeah, Housebound is a great movie.
So for those who don't know, Housebound is a New Zealand-made film. Absolutely fantastic. Very, very Kiwi. If you enjoy New Zealand-made films, I highly recommend Housebound. Basically the same premise of someone stuck in the house because they're on house arrest.
House arrest.
And
being suspicious of their neighbor.
Being suspicious of their neighbor. Do you want to go pause this and we'll go watch that?
No, but I hadn't even made that connection. That is another one. Well, maybe we could do that down the line.
Sweet.
Watch Disturbia again.
Oh, God. you're right. I just feel that the beginning of Disturbia is so weird.
Mm.
Like, it could have been quite easily that, like, because the fact that he's on the phone to his mum when the car crash happens, he could have been, like, you know, he could have been on, I don't know what licenses work like, driver's licenses work like in the States. Maybe he would, you know, his dad died and then he'd get, like, a manslaughter charge, but because he's, like, 17, he would have just got, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, there could have been a lot more ways you could get into the fact that him being a dick and just punching out his teacher.
He wasn't, like, as you said,
your teacher deserved it.
Yeah, teacher 100% deserved it because he was a dick.
Yeah.
Because I thought when he was on the phone in the car, I was like, oh, it's going to be a, you know, using the phone while driving thing. I don't think that was even technically illegal at that point in time, but it should have been.
Yeah, Mythbusters proved it.
But then it was, you know, and then I thought maybe it's because he's young, he's a teenager, maybe he's only on, you know, he's only on a learner's permit, or maybe he doesn't have a license and his dad is just letting him drive or something, you know. The accident is 100% not his fault.
No. Well, you say that.
Well, there should have been safe stopping distance.
One should have been safe stopping distance. I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure if this is legal in the States, but in New Zealand, in the road code, when you have a breakdown, you're supposed to put your when you're parked on the side of the road, you're supposed to raise your bonnet and put your hazards on.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not his fault.
Yeah.
It's a combination of multiple people's faults.
Yeah.
Because A, there's the people who are broken down, don't seem to have done anything to, they're just stopped in the middle of the road. They haven't tried to push the car to the side. They haven't done anything.
Car that overtakes them while they're on the phone is driving way too fast.
And then also it doesn't swerve out of the way until right at the last second. So he doesn't see
tailgating it for some reason.
Yeah. So that part is his fault.
Yeah.
He needs to have a safe stopping distance. But I think even if he did, I don't think he could have stopped the crash.
Yeah.
Like, if he was a bit further back from that car and then the car swerved, he still wouldn't have had time to, we would have had time to swerve though.
Yeah.
But he would have had time to swerve.
And the other thing is that it's very strange that they're on this really, like, cause they're in, like, the middle of nowhere when they're fly fishing.
Yeah.
And just four cars at the same time in the same little spot.
It's right.
A bit weird because it's not the crash, the initial crash that kills his dad. They're both fine. It's the fourth car that comes out of nowhere and just, like, fucking slams into the dad's side and just, like, obliterates him. Rear Window, on the other hand, does a really, really good job of showing, not telling. Jimmy Stewart, who hated the term Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, we've just found out that Jimmy Stewart hated being called Jimmy.
But anyway, Jimmy Stewart is asleep in a wheelchair with a broken leg, and it's one of them old school casts, which basically, like, covers up to his waist, and his entire leg is encased in plaster. And it scrolls across, so he's asleep and sweaty, and it shows the temperature gauge showing that it's, like, in the middle of summer. And then it scrolls across to a destroyed camera, and then an amazing photo of a car crash, mid-car crash.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of other photos, and then, like, negatives, and then magazine covers that he's clearly done. And you instantly understand, as a person who can pay attention for more than 30 seconds, looking at you TikTok users, how he got in the, what he does,
yeah,
and how he ended up in the cast.
Yeah.
And his eye for detail and so much about his character,
yeah,
without being like, I'm a professional photographer. I ended up in this because I watched a car crash happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's so well done. And I praise older movies for that metric because a lot of people did a lot of hard work to put into movies and writing.
Yeah.
Unlike these days where it's clearly written by AI.
Well, I think Hitchcock also was very much a stickler for detail.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the whole thing is a set.
Yeah.
They built that entire block.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And all of those apartments were fully furnished. People, like, the actors were living in the apartments.
That's crazy. Hitchcock's great.
Yeah, so, of course, the apartment that we get to see the most of the inside of is going to be very meticulously, like, all the decorations chosen. You get to see him, there's photos of him and Doyle on the wall.
Yeah.
In, you know.
Because they're war veterans.
Yeah, because he was a war photographer and Doyle was the pilot of the, they were in the Air Force.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you get to see these pictures on the wall. So you're introduced to Doyle and how, and with their relationship without anyone ever saying it. And then when he calls him up, you're like, oh, it's this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he's now a detective and whatever.
How, do you know how old Jimmy Stewart was when this movie came out?
45, I think.
This, because he's got a visiting insurance-based nurse who he also ropes into his investigation.
Yeah.
And she calls him a young man.
She does call him a young man.
And I was like, he's got grey hair and well, is like a war veteran.
I will tell you something about Jimmy Stewart. Is Jimmy Stewart didn't have hair at this point.
Really?
That is a toupee.
Fair.
I think he probably had the sides.
Yeah.
But his hairline had completely receded.
Yeah.
So he is wearing a toupee.
Yeah. So for
it is a graying toupee.
For those who are playing the unofficial, It Takes Two trivia game, I have definitely lost camera one and camera three.
Well, Jimmy Stewart had as well. Yeah. But that's an impressive toupee that he had on.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't know it.
Yeah, I thought it was his actual hair.
Yeah.
It's just the basically the same thing. You know, they're stuck in the house. They're watching their neighbors. Shia LaBeouf is a creep.
He was 46.
Jimmy Stewart is... I love the way he speaks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's like the most... Like, I could listen to an audiobook of Jimmy Stewart reading it. It'd be great.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
There's something about the cadence that's just so, like, homely, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Like, cottagecore.
Cottagecore Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Alright. The only reason I remember that he was around mid-40s was because I knew what age Grace Kelly was in the movie, because she's 25.
Yeah.
And I knew that he was about 20 years older than her.
Good on you, Hollywood.
Yeah. She's fantastic as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in general.
Yeah, I do agree. The supporting cast in Serbia is hit and miss. Mm. The guy who played Ronnie, who's like supposed to be Shia LaBeouf's best friend, who's Korean, obnoxious and stupid is his character traits.
Yeah. I mean, he does play obnoxious and stupid.
Yeah. Carrie Ann Moss, also known as Trinity, known as Shia LaBeouf's mum, is...
Not in real life.
Yeah. is kind of distant, and we never see any of her, like, struggles with losing her husband.
To some extent you do, because he, you know, you get to see that he's being, like... He tries to log into Xbox and Apple Music and stuff like that, or iTunes, and is getting his passwords are denied, and you're kind of going, oh, what's this about? But then she has like a throwaway line where she says she had to cancel them because she can't afford them.
I thought she was canceling them because
I think it's a mix.
Oh, okay.
But she's now on a single salary, single mother, looking after a son on house arrest who just wants to lay around playing video games all day.
And jerking off. And scratching his collar. He's a dog. You could have easily replaced all these characters with dogs and put it on CGI and it would have been the same movie.
Let's do it. A remake of Disturbia where it's just all dogs.
It's animated dogs. The issue I have with the mum character is she is not really, like, there's no... Yeah, okay, other than the financial issues, she's not showing any, like... There's no point in the movie where she snaps and it's just like, you know, I'm also dealing with this. There's no, like, you know, heart-to-heart moment, mum and son, where, it, you know, he's very much like, I blame the world for my dad being gone and I'm a dickhead. And I think they did really good casting Shia LaBeouf on that. But, yeah, there's no real moment of her snapping or not believing. You know, she more likely doesn't believe her son. And, you know, it's, oh, you know, he's acting up because of his loss of his dad. But, you know, on the financial point, do yourself a favor, folks. Or don't, actually. Watch a bunch of Indonesian insurance ads.
No, the Thai life insurance
ads. Thai life insurance.
Oh, my God. And, I weep watching Thai life insurance
they're
ads.
They're so well made. And it'll make you want to go get insurance. I have insurance. Lisa has insurance. Get insurance, folks. If you get killed in a car crash on the way back from fishing with Shia LaBeouf, you know, at least your family will be supported and they'll be able to afford iTunes and Xbox Live.
I don't know. She, like, we are seeing this a year after. Like, there is a time skip of a year.
Yeah.
So it's a year after, and during that year, he has totally given up on school and doing anything and being productive.
Yeah.
So she, you know, has for a year not only been mourning the loss of her husband, but also been dealing with a child who is just, who is A, very self-centered.
Yeah.
He doesn't ever show any interest in how she's doing.
True.
And B, is, you know, is suddenly failing at all the subjects, et cetera, et cetera. And she, and now is under house arrest as well. Like, that must be, like, I imagine, I'm not a parent and I don't ever want to be a parent. I imagine it
is incredibly
difficult to be a parent to a teenager.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, but to do that, A, on your own, B, grieving the loss of your husband, and C, like, for the child to be acting the way he is. Like, if what would it, how would it help for her to be breaking down in front of him? She, like, I think it's a totally valid way to cope, to just, like, shut off, to get, to just get life to keep going.
Yeah.
Because she has to be there for him for the shit that he's doing. And she is, I mean, she's not breaking down in the emotional, like, crying way, but she is, like, laying down the law to him and being like, look, you can't keep acting like this. You have to pull your weight. You have to do this. Like, I can't do this all on my own.
And he proceeds to do the washing and the dishes in the most
terrible way possible.
Enraging way possible.
Yeah. So he's obviously doing it purposely bad so that she won't ask him again. Yeah, you know, exactly. He's just making her life more difficult.
Yeah.
And you could tell, like, I mean, that there is storytelling in that in itself, that you can tell from what you do see on screen that probably for the last year he's just been making her life more difficult.
Yeah.
So you can understand why when he, you know, doesn't like the neighbor, or, you know, he acts badly towards the neighbor, she's just exhausted. She thinks this is just him being him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she thinks he's just acting out, and she doesn't take it seriously. But also, he doesn't really go to her with it either.
Yeah.
They're very distant from each other. And you don't really know, I guess. Well, I mean, the only insight you get into what they were like before is the phone call at the beginning.
Yeah.
Where he was, I guess, joking around with her and stuff. But, like, we don't really get to see what their relationship was like. We know that he was very close with his dad.
Yeah.
We don't know, were him and his mom close before, and now they've gotten distant, or were they always distant and now they don't understand each other?
David Morse is fantastic, though.
Oh, yeah.
And the flip side of that, he plays a serial killer very, very well.
Yeah.
There were some moments I felt, like, very Silence of the Lambs-esque, because he was very methodical. Like, it's actually a very interesting fact, because in movies, they always portray serial killers as these incredibly smart people who are very methodical and very, like, everything is very well planned out. But in reality, if you actually look it up, most serial killers are uneducated and just incredibly lucky.
Yeah.
Or get away with it for so long because of police.
Assuming that there's going to be someone who's intelligent and methodical?
No, just basic. You know, it's like that story of the guy who used to kill people around trains.
Yep.
And it was just because, you know, police didn't communicate with each other and didn't realize they were investigating the same crime.
It's the first serial killer, right? Yeah. It's axe murderer who traveled by train and killed a person in each town, but the police department didn't
talk to each other, or there was no national crime database.
Yeah, so they didn't realize that there was more than one murder.
Yeah. It's, David Morse's character, is just, it's really, really interesting because, you know, instantly he's played off as this creepy guy. He's far older than the woman he's bringing home. You know, his car matches, you know, there's a lot of pieces that come into play. And
it's not instant, though, because the first time you see him, it's just like, oh, he just mows his lawn. That's the only thing he does. So he's not interesting. Yeah. And then it's like, ooh. Hello.
Yeah. But here's the who knows, 16-year-old who lives next door who's, you know, constantly swimming. As the movies both go on, you know, little pieces of puzzle go into place and, you know, both characters end up roping more and more people into his, like, you know, theory, his suspicions.
Mm.
And it's really fun to watch the suspicions play out with the other characters because they're just like, oh, whatever, man. And then it's like, oh, no, hang on.
Yeah.
Let's do a stakeout. We're going to get some coffee and donuts kind of like mentality. And it's really enjoyable. And I think I was talking to you about it after we watched Disturbia. It's like, why are women so into true crime podcasts?
Yeah.
Because it is a huge industry.
Yeah.
You know, we could easily double our listening numbers if we just, like, went to, like...
Switch to true crime.
Yeah, yeah. It takes two. The killer and the victim. It's very interesting.
Mm.
I think it's like guys in war.
You reckon?
Yeah. What's your theory on why women like
true crime? I don't know. I mean, there's theories that it's because more like with especially serial killers and things like that, more women are the victims.
Right.
So it's like almost a survival thing to be like aware, because there have been instances. There was I can't think of her name. There was a girl who was kidnapped and raped, and I'm gonna have to put a bunch of trigger warnings on this episode now. Sorry. It turned out the person who did it was a serial killer and had done this multiple times, but this girl had read up on a whole lot of, you know, had watched a bunch of true crime stuff and stuff. So she literally memorized, blindfolded, the amount of steps he had taken her up. She made sure to get like his skin under her fingernails. Yep. Like she got her blindfold off for like a minute and memorize as many details as possible about his room because she was so interested in this stuff. And that was why this guy was caught in the end, was because she managed to escape and she was able to tell the police so many details. And they didn't believe her at first because they were like, if this actually happened to you, how would you even have the presence of mind to remember all these things? And she was like, I just knew if I got out, I needed to know these things to be able to tell someone what had happened to me. So I think there is, to some extent, there's a fascination with that and like figuring out like, how can I make this not happen to me?
Yeah.
And maybe that's it, but I don't know. Cause I think it's morbid curiosity a little bit as well.
Do you also think it might be related to the fact that autism isn't as easily to like, diagnosed in women?
Maybe it's just a bunch of autistic women who are hyper fixating on it. I don't know. I genuinely don't know why it's a thing though. But I think a lot of people are interested in true crime. It's not just women, but it definitely does have a huge fan base in women. And it's obviously, like, a well-known thing, because you see that in Rear Window as well. That, like, you know, Jimmy Stewart is just kind of bored, and it's like, oh, this is something. And then it's, you know, when he mentions it to Lisa, when he mentions it to Stella, the nurse, like, they both instantly get in and get really into the details, and Lisa's like, no, hang on, you know, this and this, you know, she wouldn't do this, and blah, blah, blah. And then they're the ones who are like, we need to go investigate, we need to go dig up his rose garden, we need to sneak into his apartment. Yeah. He's like, no, wait a second, guys, I didn't mean that.
It is very interesting where Lisa does bring in a lot of women's psyche into his investigation, his suspicions.
Yeah, because is she a model, I think?
I assume so.
Yeah, it's kind of implied, I think, without explicitly being said.
That because she's wearing, what was it, an $1,100, $1,500 dress.
$1,100 dress, which in today's economy would be $12,000.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. And then she mentions the fact that she had to pay for it, you know, she'd be in trouble.
Yeah, and he talks about how she doesn't wear the same dress twice. Yeah. She talks about that dress, I think she got it from, she got it from Paris.
Yeah.
And now people are buying it for that much here.
Yeah.
So she must be a model.
Yeah.
Right? Or some kind of, yeah, she's a 1950s influencer.
Yeah.
She's somewhere in that industry, but it does mean that she, as part of her job, she does have to actually understand the psyche. So it's not like, I know she's not a psychologist or anything, but it's not like she's just coming up with stuff out of nowhere. She, like, is in an industry where she has to market herself towards women. So she has to know what they think, what they want, et cetera, et cetera. So she, like, it makes sense that she actually does know this stuff.
It's very interesting, Rear Window, which wasn't done very well in Disturbia, because the only characters you get to know of as neighbours are the boys who annoy him because he's trapped inside. They do the dig dog ditch with burning dog do in a paper bag. He's spying on them, watching adult entertainment. And, like, they throw water balloons at him at one point in time. The young girl who ends up becoming his, in air quotes again, girlfriend. and then the serial killer. In Rear Window, you get a lot more information about, like, he's not just watching the killer. He's also watching the girl next door to, well, one, so if you imagine in a 3D cube, and you are the facing cube into the cube, into the internal part of the cube, you know, on one side you've got, on the left-hand side you've got this, the woman who has a bird, and she puts a bird out every morning. And I think there's a young guy who's smoking, and
it's a newlywed couple.
Yeah, newlywed couple, and you see, like, the development of their relationship. And on the far side, you've got a woman who's waiting. You don't find out to the end, but waiting for her serviceman to return, her partner, who's also entertaining a bunch of men at her property, and is also always dancing in skimpy clothing.
She's a ballet dancer.
Yeah. And then on the other side, on the right-hand side, you've got a struggling composer. On the top floor of the far side, you've got this couple who sleep on their balcony because it's so hot.
Yeah, they're sleeping on the fire escape. And they've got
a little dog that they have a basket that they rig up and down so he can go to the bathroom. Underneath them, down the bottom floor is... No, she's on the bottom floor, left bottom, is a fussy lady who's, like, always involved in everybody else's business.
Mm-hmm. The bottom and the middle, I think, is Miss Lonely Hearts, the lady who's, like, acting out.
Yeah, and who's dating younger men. And there's moments where she's contemplating suicide by a drug overdose. It's very interesting, and you get a lot more information of just, like, all these other things happening that don't really... None of them are really involved. Well, they are. That's the interesting thing. Little tidbits of them are involved in the plot. You know, the dog being, like, dog dying. And
because the dog is digging up the flower garden belonging to the guy.
And, you know, she's screaming on her balcony about how could you, all of, you know, the neighbors kill her dog, you know, what pieces of shit you all are.
Yeah.
And the only person who doesn't come to the window is the person who's guilty, who happens to be the murderer.
Yeah.
And it was like, and then the composer playing music, and it's like for a romantic dinner, for Jimmy and Lisa. And what is his character's name?
LB Jeffries, I think. They just call him Jeff, but Jeff is a short version of his last name. I don't think we ever get to find out what his first name is.
It's probably in the character.
We can call him Jeff.
Yeah.
Probably in the one.
I was like, Shia LaBeouf, that's not right. it's probably in the credits of what I was going to say. Cast.
I think he's just credited as LB Jeffries.
Yeah, LB Jeffries. So yeah, Jeff.
I don't know what the LB stands for.
LeBron James.
LeBron Jeffries.
LeBron Jeffries. Yeah, and there's lots of little, like, stuff, and you're, like, watching people's lives and the ups and downs. It's really, really fascinating. Back to, you know, Disturbia, which is just, how do we get teenage boys to watch our movie? Let's have lots of close-ups of a girl swimming and sunbathing. And you're just like, okay. And she's into him creeping on her, which is also really weird.
I think there's also hints at her being potentially abused by her father.
Yeah.
At least verbally abused.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it is mentioned the reason they live in suburbia now is because her dad had a wandering penis and her mum just, you know, cries all the time and, you know, doesn't matter that about the two car garage and the, you know, white picket fence, you know, the temptation will be gone. Right. The reality is that cheaters always cheat.
So she doesn't have a great relationship with her parents, and it's even, you know, that she comes out, and when she sees him spying on her, she comes over and she's just like, oh, I'm locked out of my house.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you know, and trying to figure out how he can help. She's like, no, I'll stay locked out. Because she doesn't, because for her, it's better to interact with these people than it is to go home. So I think that's an element of it. And maybe that comes into why she's so interested in the potential crime stuff.
She's not done a lot of stuff either.
No, that's fair enough.
TV movies, couple of episodes of television shows. Maybe Walking Madsen. What's this? Independent film. Yeah, it doesn't look a lot in her, not straight to DVD, awkward. Yeah, this isn't, her career didn't go as far.
Yeah, I feel like the kid who played
Ronnie
probably didn't have much of a career either. Shia LaBeouf obviously did. David Morse has a decent career. Carrie-Anne Moss is great. But yeah, so I don't know.
He was in Friday the 13th in 2009 and Nightmare on Elm Street in 2010. Oh, he's uncredited. Ouch. Aaron Yu. ER, The Tomorrow People, Hawaii 5-0. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, there's just some teens, yeah, some background teens.
Just background teens.
obviously
the modus operandi of the killers is a lot different.
Yeah.
One is a crime of passion, which is when you kill your wife in the middle of summer and cut her into pieces and then transport her body out and leave far too much evidence. So that guy should have been a true crime podcast enjoyer. He would have probably gotten away with it. Don't kill people in apartments. It's just, you know.
I don't think he did leave too much evidence, though.
Yeah, but it's also the 1950s and the cops are just like, eh.
Yeah. I mean, Detective Doyle doesn't believe, you know, like Lisa's saying, why, if his wife has gone to this other place, you know, why did she leave her belongings here? Why did she leave her bag, her favorite purse, and her jewelry? And he doesn't believe that. And it's only when they have her wedding ring and they're like, oh, yeah, hang on. she probably would not have left her wedding ring. That they finally believe, you know, what's going on.
It was very much that moment of like, oh, don't worry, your dog's not dead. It just moved upstate to a nice farm. explanation of where his wife went.
This is the thing, is that they did have witnesses saw him with the woman who got on that train and whatever and arrived. And either he's cheating on her or he hired someone to do that.
Yeah.
And you have the same thing happening basically in Disturbia, where they think that he's killed this woman, and then she appears to go out and get in her car and drive off.
Yeah.
And then you find out that it was him in a wig. But I don't know. David Morse is 6'4".
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know how you would mistake him for that lady. But then again, they're using... So in Rear Window... So in both cases, they have a pair of binoculars that they use for some of the watching. In Rear Window, actually, a lot of the time, he's just looking.
Through his camera as well.
And a lot of the time, he's just looking with his eyes, and then he gets out the binoculars, and then the camera. And he's a photographer, and he has a really good camera with, like, a 400mm lens. In Disturbia, they're using, like, a Sony Handycam or something.
Yeah.
And it's always zoomed in way too much. So all you're seeing is, like, just, like, shitty pixelated, like, someone's chin. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, why... Like, how are you going to find any kind of evidence if you're zoomed in this much? It's so stupid. It's very annoying. Because they miss... They're, like, recording, but they're missing stuff because they're just zoomed in on one, like, very specific point. You're like, you're not even seeing what's happening here.
But it does actually play into the plot.
Yeah.
Because Ronnie, while running through the serial killer's house, drops the camera and then pretends to be dead and hiding in his closet, which is a dick move. Ronnie is a dick.
And an idiot.
And it just happens to pick up footage of, like, a corpse that's in his wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, Shia LaBeouf as an idiot character, old Kale, he... does some decent investigation, like, you know, the alterations to the house and stuff.
Yeah.
It's, like, really smart. It's just the rest of his everything that just brings it down. And, you know, like, there are probably people out here who really enjoy Shia LaBeouf. That's fine. You know, it's okay to be wrong.
What is your big problem with Shia LaBeouf?
Just a lot.
Okay. I think you need to watch Holes. Holes is a good
movie. We watched Holes.
Yeah, I'm just saying that we need to watch Holes again.
You need to watch iRobot and just the scenes with Shia LaBeouf in it. You Holes need to watch that edit of Transformers where it's just Shia LaBeouf.
Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
He
became a meme and then he, like, went too hard in it and, like, apparently he's really disturbing to the process when it comes to actually... acting on screen.
I think he's...
Like that whole weird, he didn't shower for like a couple of months when they were filming Fury.
Maybe he learned that from this, because apparently David Morse is a method actor.
Okay.
And like, it freaks Shia LaBeouf out.
Because he was just like trying to kill him for real.
Yeah. No, he just would not speak to any of the teenagers.
Right.
Throughout the whole of filming, he just wouldn't, he would just like ignore their presence. And then, like, after it was wrapped, he was like, oh, hey, guys. It was, like, really nice to them. He's like, what's going on? Why is this guy like this? So maybe he learned it from him. I don't know. I think Shia LaBeouf strikes me as a person who has some serious mental health issues, some of which may have been because of his past as a child actor. Yeah. I feel like he needs help rather than being someone who needs to be criticized. But I don't think, you know, as an actor, I don't think he was terrible.
He's not a terrible actor. I don't think
he was terrible in this movie.
Oh, God, he was born the same year I was.
Yeah, that makes
sense. He's older than me by, like, less than a month.
Yeah.
That's disturbing.
Why?
Because I just imagine everybody younger than me.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
so I think... I haven't watched Honey Boy, which is the movie that's kind of like a semi-autobiographical Shia LaBeouf movie about his childhood. And maybe we should watch that. Maybe we'll understand more about, you know, why he is how he is. But he definitely is an interesting
person. Forgot he was in Constantine. Sorry.
So just thinking about... Because he did... Remember he did that art... like thing where he
which one
he did one where he was just like in a glass box in an art exhibition or something like that, and just people could come up and do whatever, but then people like literally assaulted him.
Yeah.
And he just sat there and took it. And people, like, sexually assaulted him.
Yeah.
And he just sat there and took it. And it's like, is he okay? I don't think he's okay. I certainly, at that point in his life, I don't think he was okay. He also did, like, a performance art thing where he sat in the cinema and watched all of his movies and live-streamed just his own face.
Yeah.
He definitely strikes me as someone who really needs a lot of help and support and maybe didn't get it. And I don't know, has he got it now or not? But, you know.
He's in Megalocalypse.
Okay.
And we've talked about that before. It's a weird one where someone has to act and interact with Adam Driver in the movie. So that's why a whole bunch of movie theaters haven't picked it up, because...
Yeah. That makes no sense to me, but okay. You know, but it makes perfect sense to me that Shia LaBeouf is in it.
Yeah, yeah.
That seems like his kind of thing. He's really into the weird performance art scene. Yeah. So, I get that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like I want to shit on Shia LaBeouf. But that's, you know, that's up to you.
I'm not shitting on him. I'm just criticizing him. There's a difference. I don't dislike him. I just don't feel that he deserves as many roles as he gets.
Okay.
But it's the same issue that I have with M. Night Shyamalan. Who keeps giving that guy money? I don't understand. He made two good movies. Yeah, single other one has been garbage. M. Night
Shyamalan has made like a very small handful of decent movies.
Named
a
who?
Long time ago.
Signs and The Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense and Unbreakable?
Oh, yeah, okay, Unbreakable's good too. So that's three.
And those were very, like, old. Relatively close to each other in time and all more than 20 years old at this point.
And then you get, like, Lady in the Water and what was that one where someone in the elevator is the devil?
Oh, I was going to say The Village.
The Village was awful.
The Village was terrible.
What's the new one that's coming out? Oh, there was one that
old?
Old when you're on a beach and then you get time travel.
Yeah.
And I think the new one, there was a new one
Was
like...
Knock of the Cabin?
No, that was the older one. There's a new one.
What? Knock of the Cabin is more new than old.
No, there's a new one.
He's produced something called The Watchers. Is that it?
Watchers. Yeah,
directoring thing.
2024.
Servant? He directed a TV series called Servant.
Never heard of it.
But that's the latest thing he's directed. Before that, it was Knock at the Cabin. And then Old, Glass, Split, The Visit, After Earth, Last Airbender.
Oh, it's happening. His daughter. It's his daughter.
What's his daughter?
Written and directed by his daughter.
Oh, Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs were three movies in a row.
Right.
So he did Praying with Anger and Wide Awake, which I don't know either of those movies. And then he did Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, and then The Village and Lady in the Water.
God, Lady in the Water is such an awful movie.
He had a good streak of three movies, and then he just shat the bed.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Yeah. He realized that twists are what he's known for, and then every movie had to have a twist in it.
It's so stupid. It's so stupid.
Anyway.
He
wasn't involved with Glass or Split.
Yeah, he was.
Was he?
Yeah.
Was he like executive producer?
He directed them.
Oh, okay.
Directed Split, directed Glass.
Interesting. Did he write them though?
Because
I think that's the big problem. I think he can't write.
Let's see, what did he do as a writer? He wrote Split, he wrote Glass.
Oh, interesting.
He wrote Devil, is the one that you wrote before.
Yeah.
In terms of writing, hang on, hold on a second. In terms of writing, there was a movie between Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. Do you want to guess what it was?
No, I want you to
Stuart Little. Stuart Little, the movie about a mouse played by Michael J. Fox. Stuart Little, he wrote Sixth Sense and then he wrote Stuart Little. And then he wrote Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Lady of the Water, The Happening, Last Airbender. Why did he write Stuart Little? Okay, we've gone down a weird rabbit hole here. This has got nothing to do with the movie. So anyway, Jimmy Stewart. Do you know Jimmy Stewart campaigned for Nixon?
Sorry, I Okay. We want to adopt a child. Let's go to the orphanage. What child are you going to pick?
We'll pick the mouse.
Take the fucking mouse.
The mouse, the mouse.
Okay. All right, Jimmy Stewart, Nixon, Watergate, 9/11, cult, yeah. Moving on.
But Jimmy Stewart also campaigned for Reagan.
Oh, my God.
Do you know what?
Actors shouldn't be involved in politics.
Do you want to know something worse? You want to know something worse about Jimmy Stewart campaigning for Reagan?
What?
Is that he initially didn't want to campaign for Reagan. Because he campaigned for Reagan for governorship first, and then he campaigned for his presidential campaign. He didn't want to campaign for Reagan for governor originally, because he thought Reagan was too much like a Democrat.
What?
Because Ronald Reagan used to belong to the Democrat Party. And Jimmy Stewart's like, no, he's not Republican enough for me. And then
Ronald Reagan, like, basically destroyed the planet.
Yeah, I know. And then he became best friends with Ronald Reagan and campaigned for him. And he was like, oh, you're a real Republican. So I think if Jimmy Stewart was alive today, he would be canceled in an instant. I also think I would not agree with any of his politics.
Yeah.
He's clearly a staunch Republican. But he's great in these movies. He's good. He's good in Rear Window. I love Rear Window.
Yeah. Have we watched any other... any other movies with Jimmy Stewart in it?
We did a podcast episode on It's a Wonderful Life.
Did we?
Yeah, we compared it with It's a Very Merry Muppet Christmas Movie. The movie where Kermit does 9/11.
Man, I didn't remember the 9/11 part. That's a worry.
You forgot about It's a Wonderful Life? It's okay. In our last episode, I forgot that we ever watched the remake of The Lion King.
That's true.
Which was much more recent.
Was it Ronald Reagan that was shot at?
So many people have been shot at.
Yeah, but isn't the reason that he won because he was shot?
Oh, I don't know. Is that why he won?
Who was the Jodie Foster guy? Who did he shoot?
Sorry. What?
The guy who was obsessed with the movie Taxi Driver and Jodie Foster as a underage prostitute who then ended up trying to shoot him. Was that...
I thought you were... for John Hinckley Jr., I thought you were accusing... For a split second, my brain got confused. I thought you were accusing Ronald Reagan of shooting Jodie Foster. And I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah, was Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, he did shoot... He did attempt to assassinate Ronald Reagan.
To get Jodie Foster to know who he was. That's a very weird, like... That is some.
Well, I'm pretty sure Jodie Foster is a Democrat, so I guess. maybe she would have. Maybe things would have been good, better for Jodie Foster if Reagan had been shot by this guy.
Oh my God! I think that's we've just come up with another alternate universe, story arc, and that's the catalyst, you know. Kermit's not born, therefore 9/11 doesn't happen.
Jimmy Stewart isn't born. So in the world of It's a Wonderful Life, where Jimmy Stewart's never born, Ronald Reagan doesn't become president, and then...
And then trickle-down economics doesn't happen, and yeah. There's a strong middle class.
And the climate change isn't as bad, and, you know,
But then I think, isn't that the whole, like, Red Dawn? I think that goes into the Red Dawn subgenre, because there's no strong American president to stand up against the Ruskies during the Soviet Union era. America gets invaded. I can't remember. It's hard to keep all these alternate timelines that totally happened and aren't just fiction inside my brain at all times, you know, being a multi-dimensional being at all times.
Sorry, you were in multiple dimensions?
Sorry. Sorry, you had to find out this way.
We're going...
I was there.
I don't know why I'm
I was
up,
there the day Harambe was shot.
Literally looking up Ronald Reagan. I need to not be doing that. What are these movies about? How did we get away from them so far?
I was there the day man failed.
So...
Cast it into the fire!
Rear Window.
Yeah.
He's looking out the window.
Yeah.
There's people.
Yeah. John Henley Jr. shoots Ronald Reagon.
Can I say, did you notice that the the murderers in both cases are very, like, physically intimidating.
Yeah. Again, as you mentioned, Morse is, what, 6'4"?
He's 6'4".
And the other guy who played... What's the character's name? We just literally watched this movie. Get away from me. I just opened my phone. It was a picture of Reagan.
So our friend Raymond Burr, who played Lars Thorwald.
Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr is 6'2". And he does look very physically intimidating.
He's got a very wide face.
Yeah, but he's also just very large, very tall. Like, he's 6'2". And when he's in the room with Jimmy Stewart, like, there's angles that make him look taller, I think, as well. And also, Jimmy Stewart is in a wheelchair. Because, let me tell you, if they were standing next to each other, Jimmy Stewart is taller than 6'2". He was 6'3", so he would have been larger than that man. But I guess him being in a cast and being in a wheelchair and stuff, and then, you know, shooting the angles up from his point of view.
And he's also not bulky.
No.
Because there's a lot of scenes with him without a shirt on, and he is not peak, like, male performance.
I didn't even notice there were scenes with him without a shirt on. What were you looking at? Were we watching different movies?
No, we were watching the same movie. There's two moments where he's getting massages.
Yeah. I just didn't even think about it that way. I was just like, oh, she's a nurse and she's massaging him. And she could tell that he's been sleeping in the wheelchair looking out the window instead of sleeping in his bed.
Yeah, both movies sort of end in the same... Well, no, that's not true. They do both have physical conflict with the killer, and that's how, you know, they Shia LaBeouf stabs... obviously, spoilers. stabs him with...
garden shears.
Gun shears and... Jimmy has a, you know, a bit of a tumble in his house, and they try and throw him out a window. And the movie ends both with that sort of, like, happy-go-lucky, everything's all well and good in the world.
It's very... The ending of Rear Window is very funny, where you're seeing, like...
He's back in the wheelchair.
What I was going to say, you're seeing everyone else first. Because at the beginning, you see everyone else first, and then you see him, you know, in the wheelchair with the cast and see who he is. And you get to see how all the neighbors have changed, and you see that, like, the Miss Lonely Hearts, who had, as we mentioned, she had been about to attempt suicide, but then she actually heard the songwriter playing music. So you can see them together, and finally they have linked up and found love together. The newlyweds are not doing so great. Yeah. The ballet dancer, her partner has come back from war.
Full service. Or it might have been Korea.
No, it wouldn't have been Korea. It wouldn't have been Korea yet.
Might have been Korea.
Might have been. I can't remember what years the Korean War were.
But you're watching 8 Simple Rules. He fought in Korea.
He did fight in Korea. So they show a lot of, you know, you see all the updates on all the neighbors and, like, how they're doing. The fire escape couple have a new dog, etc. And then you get back to Jimmy Stewart, and now both of his legs are in cast. After being thrown out the window.
1950 to
1953. So it would have been ended.
Yeah. So maybe...
But he could have been still a bit away and then come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. Jimmy Stewart was a veteran of World War II and Vietnam.
Yeah.
There you go. Did you know that about him?
Yep.
And obviously in the movie he's supposed to be a World War II vet as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know where I was going with this. I can't remember anymore.
Endings of the movies.
Yeah, well, you brought that up.
Yeah. it's really disturbing. Like, they went, like, you know, he's, like, just sawed his wife up and dumped her somewhere in Rear Window. But in Disturbia, it's like he's been doing this for so long.
Yeah. 3 years ago, they said there was multiple murders in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
So he fit the same MO.
Yeah. But, like, from the amount of corpses that are underneath that guy's house, he's also been doing it there for ages as well.
Yeah.
To the point where some of them are, like, skeleton. Like, it's so weird, because he's, like, embalmed some of them and, like, stuffed them in the walls, and other he's, like, left in, like, a weird pit.
He's got a weird pit under his house.
Yeah, in the foundations of his house.
So weird.
Like, the smell alone on that would be... You know, like, in the whole weird deer cover story where he hits a deer on the road and then just, like, hacks it up and leaves it in his garage. Yeah. It's like, Is that like a cover? Like, oh, if there was a weird smell. Oh, don't worry, guys. It's just this deer that I've got decomposing. Yeah. Like,
it's very strange.
Yeah.
The deer situation, because it's like, why? Yeah, like, but I mean, also, like, the cops, you think the cops would be like, when and why and how did you take the time to, like, actually dismember this deer that you hit?
Yeah.
Like,
but the cops are out for Shia LaBeouf because the main cop who's in charge of his...
Yeah, but he does...
Activation is his, like...
Is the cousin of the teacher.
Yeah.
But he does get suspicious. Yeah. He's like, something doesn't add up here.
And it causes him to die.
Yeah.
Because the cop gets killed.
True. The cop does get killed. Yeah. I don't know. It's an odd one. I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what it was.
Fair enough.
Something about David Morse.
Something about David Morse.
Yeah, maybe. I do have a note here in my trivia about David.
Just jump into trivia then.
Yeah, about his method acting situation. Yeah. Well, not really method acting. This is just about what he's like as an actor, apparently. So apparently, there's a scene where he filmed with Shia LaBeouf where he slams his hand into the wall and he broke three fingers.
Right.
And Shia LaBeouf said that you could see that the fingers were broken, like they were all mangled up, but yeah. David Morse just didn't say a word about it, and everyone was like, hey, are you okay? What can we do to help? And he's like, no, I'm okay, let's do the next take. And it was just there with, like, mangled up fingers that he's just broken and just kept going. And so Shia LaBeouf described it as intimidating, to say the least. That, yeah, like I said, they were freaked out by his dedication to method acting and stuff. I already talked about the other bit of trivia I have for Disturbia, which is that the copyright holders of the short story It Had to Be Murder sued them for using the story without permission, and a federal judge dismissed the suit, saying that the main plots are similar only at a high unprotectable level of generality, where Disturbia is rife with subplots, the short story has none. The setting and mood of the short story are static and tense, whereas setting and mood of Disturbia are more dynamic and peppered with humor and teen romance. So people do, you know, people agree that it does feel like it's just an updated version of Rear Window, but yeah. They legally
distinct.
Legally, they are distinct. Rear Window trivia. Oh yeah, I think I talked about how the whole thing was a set.
Yeah.
So it took 50 men 2 months to build and cost somewhere between $75,000 and $100,000, which would be the equivalent of about $1.2 million now. And to get the scale right, they had to remove the soundstage floor so the courtyard could be built in a form of storage space in the basement. So the apartment that Jeff is in, that it's supposed to be like a second-story apartment, is actually at street level.
Right.
And there were 31 apartments, of which 12 were fully furnished, and live birds and cats were allowed to wander around the courtyard to add realism. It became, like, well known that that was a thing that was happening, so, like, visitors' studio all wanted to go in and see the set, and, you know, it was featured in magazine spreads while the shooting was still happening. The sound, so the opening scene of the movie has some orchestral music.
Right.
But for the entire rest of the movie, all the sound is diegetic. Yeah. So all the music you hear is being played in the it's in really the film. Well done. You know, every sound is something that he's actually hearing. There's one bit that I thought was very funny, which is that Alfred Hitchcock, like we mentioned, is very into... detail and making sure all the details are correct. Sir Alfred Hitchcock worked a lot with the costume designer, especially on Grace Kelly's look. Yeah. Apparently he was known for having like an obsessive relationship with leading ladies in his films, but apparently the negligee that Lisa wears to spend the night at Jeff's, he was like really wanted the details to be right, and he apparently pulled Edith Head, the costume designer, aside and suggested they give Grace Kelly false breasts to make her look bustier in it. And so it put Edith Head and Grace Kelly just made a few changes to the costume itself and her posture.
Yeah.
And then he believed that they had given her false breasts to make her look bustier because she, you know, because they'd she was holding herself in a way that she did. So, like, they didn't actually do it. And he was like, yeah, yeah, that looks perfect. So he thought they had actually put in padding when they hadn't. But also, can you imagine having Grace Kelly as your lead actress and you're like, you know, we gotta make her look bustier. Like, yeah, you've got, like, the most perfect specimen of a woman. Like, yeah, especially at that time. Like, she was the classic beauty. She went and married a prince, you know? Like,
she gotta strengthen that relationship with France, you know?
I think, like, you know, she'd be pretty good. She's, I just can't imagine having Grace Kelly in your movie and you're like, we're going to put padding in her outfit. It's ridiculous. What else did I say? Oh, yeah. So the you know when they... Okay. When Thorwald comes into Jeff's apartment and confronts him.
Yeah.
And Jeff does the, like, infamous, like, using the flash bulbs
to blind him. Yeah.
The way they decided what the effect would look like was that they put a bunch of their crew members in a dark room and then repeatedly exposed them to camera flashes.
Wow.
And got them to describe what they saw. And unanimously, they reported seeing bright, expanding orange circles that temporarily disoriented them.
Right.
And then the first attempt at the effect was, like, white circles bouncing around, and all of the crew members objected to it. They're like, no, that's not what it looked like.
Because they would have had it been painted.
Yeah.
Oh, in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the special effects supervisor changed the effect to have that reddish orange circle that expands out from the camera. But literally it was because the first attempt, like, everyone who they had tested on was like, no, that's not it. No, you got it wrong. It doesn't look like that. I think that was pretty much all the trivia I had. Except obviously the most important piece of trivia, which is not recorded anywhere, which is that
in the movie, they scream out your full name.
Jimmy Stewart shouts my name.
Yeah.
There is, yeah, because because his girlfriend's name is Lisa, played by Grace Kelly, and the detective who he's friends with from his time in the Air Force is Detective Tom Doyle.
Yeah.
And they have, so Lisa had broken into the apartment and then had been arrested, and he called Tom, or he got Tom to call him and said, you know, this is where Lisa is. She got the wedding ring. So he had gone to get Lisa from the police station and was coming back at the same time that Thorwald was in the apartment attacking Jimmy Stewart. And Jimmy Stewart is about to be thrown out the window. And he turns around and sees that they're arriving and he goes, Lisa! Doyle! And it's the greatest line in cinema history, personally, yeah. I think. That line where Jimmy Stewart just screams my name out a window for fun, you know. What did you think? Was that a good...
Yeah,
it was good writing?
Yeah, it was fine.
great name choices. It was written
before you were born.
Was it?
Box office obviously doesn't make a lot of sense to compare.
Yeah, I didn't even look at it.
There's like 50, almost 50... No, there's over 50 years between them.
Yeah, it's not like... Because I think it makes sense when we're doing remakes to kind of compare how each did.
And twin movies that came out the same year.
Oh yeah, movies that came out the same year. It makes sense to see how what the budget was, what the box office was. But I think with, like, even at a long distance with remakes, it's good to see, you know, how successful this one was versus how successful this one was. Even if the numbers aren't comparable, but in this case, it's not really relevant.
Well, that's been us for this episode of It's Takes Two. Stay safe out there, folks. You never know. Your next door neighbor may be a killer.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Discord. Show notes down somewhere. Up, maybe, to the left. Our website is ittakes2.co.nz.
Yep.
And other social media platforms also.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of links on our
website. Available at request.
They're all on there on our website. You can find our Discord link, our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which we don't really use anymore, etc. But they're all on there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.